At Ocado, you'll save 25% on your first shop and get free delivery. Which means if you were to buy a four-cheese pizza, you'd basically be getting one of the cheeses for free. Save and splurge at Ocado, the online supermarket. Geographical and other restrictions. Minimum spend £60 and charges apply. New customers only. Maximum saving £20 terms at ocado.com.
If you're tired all the time, if you're gaining weight but barely eating, if your hair is thinning and your sleep is broken, your mood is off, and your doctor says your lab work looks normal, this episode is for you. Because what if normal isn't optimal? What if you're not crazy, not lazy, not aging poorly? What if your hormones are out of rhythm and no one is connecting the dots? Well, Dr. Rice is here, so let's start right here, right now. Why are so many women exhausted and not being told nothing is wrong?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. This is a very important topic. I really appreciate the opportunity to be on here. This is going to resonate with a lot of your audience because this is, honestly, I just had four of these today. So I'm in clinic today, opened up the afternoon to be here for your audience. And, you know, this is so common. And I think what's important to understand is none of this is accidental. This is a physiologic, you know, certainty of life that's going to happen. You know, there's certain, I guess, genetic and environmental influences that lead to a woman maybe having more severe symptoms or presentations or whatever than another woman. But by and large, this process, you know, ubiquitously is going to happen across the board for every female. And as a physician, I think it's incredibly important that a woman find a health advocate, a physician health advocate, who understands this stuff to the level of being able to talk about this on an individual basis. I think it's important to understand what happens on average and in populations, but ultimately you've got to understand that each one of these presenting symptoms and issues that you literally just outlined can have unique appearances and ways that it performs in every woman. And you have to find someone who's like a forensic scientist who can connect the dots and say, the reason this is happening is, but you're always on this as a doctor, you're on this proverbial hunt for what chicken is laying the egg of the symptom you have. And you've got to find that chicken, and then you've got to figure it out so that the symptoms go away. And so this is very, very common. And it's just not this sort of, the way we're talking is just not formal in medical school and residency and in our formal training. This is just not how we're taught to think about things. We're taught to just literally look at, you know, diagnostics and not really think about what someone's saying or how they're describing something. And that's the reality of, I think, what we're seeing these days.
Oh yeah. I remember when I started getting symptoms for perimenopause, I went to my GYN and I started talking to my GYN. And the first thing that she said, maybe we should put you on birth control. And I looked at her, I was like, birth control, you know, women are being dismissed every day. Like thyroid numbers are in range, cortisol is fine, estrogen is normal for your age. Okay. You know, and so you're doing fine, they say. And then, you know, but they're feeling terrible. You know, where is the disconnect going on?
Yeah, the disconnect is 100% each one of those you just said. So cortisol, which comes from the adrenal glands, thyroid hormone, which comes from the thyroid gland, and then sex hormones, which comes from ovaries in women and testicles in men. All three of those together are controlled by the hypothalamus, the part of the brain. All three of those age together. And the idea is all three of those, when they go awry or when they don't work as well, they sort of cross-pollinate in the same symptom presentations. I mean, weight gain, fatigue, sleep, mood, all of this stuff sort of runs together. And the real reason why I think women unfortunately get led astray is we just aren't trained on how to work this up comprehensively. We need to look at the human body as one connected piece here. It's not just isolated out as my ovaries work or they don't, but my thyroid works great and my adrenals work great. And the reality is when you understand actually what happens at each glandular level, you realize if one is off physiologically, there's no way you have pristine optimization of the other gland or the other two glands. The best example is as women sort of hit their 40s and go into their 40s and their hormones are declining and they're going from premenstrual, regular menstruation into this weird zone before menopause. And menopause, as your audience understands, is when the pause is hit and there's no more menstruation. But there's this sort of, you know, 8 to 10 year zone sometimes that women go through where they get surges of estrogen, then they get valleys of estrogen, then they have no estrogen, then they'll have cycles for 3 straight months regularly, then they'll have no cycles for 6 months, then they'll come back and have cycles irregularly for 3 months. And literally that's what's happening to their emotions. I feel great. Yeah. I'm happy. Now I'm moody. Now I'm irritable. Now I'm back to being moody. Now I'm having panic attacks. Now it's the same thing that's happening with the mood that's happening with the fluctuation in hormones. And when that's happening, that whole idea of perimenopause, there's no question you're putting strain on your adrenal glands and you're grabbing all that cortisol to help you figure out how to handle the hormonal imbalance. And the more cortisol you withdraw from the cortisol bank, it's what you're going to have is wired and tired. You just have these women that I'm just tired all the time. I have mid-abdominal fat that I cannot lose no matter what I do. And it's because of this high cortisol state. What does that do? Well, as estrogen drops and cortisol goes up, you create that fatigued woman who has belly fat that she hates. That's two things. Third thing is that influences if you're able to produce thyroid correctly. Typically, and we can get into this later, but the thyroid gland is made up of a few hormones, but those hormones are not converted efficiently if you have high cortisol and low estrogen. All of these things are physiologic facts, but what I just went through is not taught anywhere in sort of formal medical training. So as a physician, you have to seek this training out, apply it to your patients, see it with your own eyes, and then realize this is actually what's happening. And then you start giving women their lives back, probably very similar to your story.
Yeah, totally similar. You know, do you think that the reference ranges are too broad? Because a lot of times when you go into a doctor's office, their blood level, the markers are completely different than when you go to a doctor who specializes in hormones. They're looking at a totally different marker system. And then these women will go into the doctor's office and they'll say, well, you know, my doctor says my blood work is fine, you know, but meanwhile, if you went to a hormone specialist, they're going to say, no, you have problems here, and because their markers are completely different.
Thank you for bringing this up. This is a very, very critical point. If nothing else that your audience hears today, this particular point is something they need to hear. Reference ranges for lab testing are population based, which means they take 1,000 random people off of the street, they put a needle in their vein, they take their blood, and they check, let's say, their estrogen level. And it's between X and it's between Z. It's between some number and another number. They take 1,000 of those. They find the highest, the lowest, and they find a range. Then they put that on a lab slip. And then you, as the consumer, your doctor gives you this. And the doctors are guilty of this too. They look at it and they'll be like, oh, you're within range. Okay. Population-based ranges have absolutely nothing to do with clinical medicine, period. So when you talk about hot flashes, dryness, fatigue, body comp, muscle, sleep, sex drive, that's clinical. You need to look at data that looks at outcomes on clinical symptomatology and bone loss and heart disease and cancer and cognitive decline. That's clinical medicine. Labs are not built on clinical medicine. They're built on population studies. So they're a tool that we look at, but they're not biblical. They're not doctrine. You just look at the reference range, you look at the symptoms, you look at your experience, and you help fix a patient. That's basically how we're supposed to do it.
Now, I want to just like simplify this, like for people who, you know, they're going through this, but they might not understand, you know, I call it like the domino effect. Like when one hormone shifts, you know, it seems like everything starts to shift a little. You know, what happens actually when hormones start to shift?
Yeah. So hormones start to shift as the age continuum happens. And so when we're talking about hormones, let's just partition this into the world of sex hormones. So in women, they have estrogen, progesterone, and testosterone. And as the ovaries, which produce those, the adrenal glands, which produce those, and then peripheral tissue, i.e. fat or adipose tissue, produces those. As each one of those areas ages, the decline in hormones happen. So as estrogen declines and progesterone declines and testosterone declines, you get different sort of symptoms. But that decline is 100% going to happen. The timeline is what's different. We don't know if it's going to happen prematurely in your late 30s, mid 30s, you know, early 40s, mid 40s. We've got women that are still menstruating into their 50s. And so, you know, we just never know. where that's going to land. What really matters on the female side is to know that these things happen and to just know what symptoms align with each one of those, right? So if you want me to break down, so with estrogen, as estrogen declines, estrogen, the first thing I would tell you is, as estrogen declines, your thermometer changes, your thermostat changes. The thermoregulation of your body changes. You get more hot quickly. And that's because as estrogen declines, your body senses very small temperature changes, but overcompensates. So your body's going to think you're overheating when you're really not. So then it tells you to cool off a lot. Antithesis of that is your body's going to sense that you're cool when it's really not, and you're going to have what's called a hot flash. And that's all very, very normal at a very small temperature change. That's one huge symptom of estrogen levels starting to decline. The second one is estrogen's a lubricator. So if your eyes get dry, if your mouth gets dry, if any tissue in your body is dry, including getting up with joint stiffness or just having to like moving your legs, it's just harder to like get going, or your skin just feels dry or your joints ache, that's estrogen, period. Those two symptoms are estrogen decline. As your progesterone declines with it, sleep gets off, your sense of well-being, which is somewhat of a nebulous concept, but the feeling of unwellness comes more when progesterone goes down. If you're an anxious woman or man potentially, but if you're an anxious woman, progesterone, the decline in progesterone is linked to that. Testosterone, sex drive, orgasmic function, muscle tone, fat loss, period. Those four things right there. If your testosterone is going down, those are the symptoms to sort of think about. So those are the main things that a woman would exhibit or feel. And they don't have to feel all three of those different hormones at once. They may just start with just one of those things, but they need to understand it's a certainty of life. And the great thing is hormone replacement therapy done by the right doctor, the right way, given to the right patient, produces the right result. If you do that and you early detect an early diagnosis, you're going to help this woman more than she's ever going to know transition straight from premenopause, cruise through perimenopause, and then eventually hit this concept of postmenopause. And it's beautiful. It's the women that never do any hormone stuff, or they're scared of it, or don't have doctors that know how to talk about it or test for it, that they get to their postmenopausal. And by that point, they're losing bone, they're losing memory, everything is, their body comp has changed, they're just not happy. And then you have to really work hard to sort of restore them back when you could have jumped in earlier, if that makes sense.
Oh, definitely makes sense. Now, also, another common thing that I hear a lot of women talking about, like, how do you, what happens when your thyroid starts to slow down? Because you get a lot of women say, oh, my hands are cold, my feet are cold, and they start getting symptoms of other sorts. How do you know when your thyroid slows down? Because that's another common one.
So just like I paralleled with sex hormones, the thyroid hormone or the thyroid gland, that ages as well, just like the ovarian, you know, just like ovaries do. It ages the same exact way. So as the thyroid starts to age, you start to, the gland gives off, for the sake of this discussion, we'll talk about, it puts off something called T3 and T4. So it makes two different hormones. T4 is sort of a storage hormone called prohormone. So T4 is waiting to become the active hormone called T3. So as those hormones start to decline in production, then you get a few things. The biggest one, cold hands, cold feet. That then goes to cold body, and you just generally feeling cold when it's not actually cold. Two, hair all over, hair thinning. So when you comb or you brush or you shower, you just have gobs of hair that you see on your hand or you see down in the drain. That's two. Your nails start to get brittle. Your eyebrows start to thin. You get a little bit of constipation. You get a little bit of like fatigue, which I get it. A lot of things cause fatigue, but thyroid's one of them. And then weight challenges. And then sometimes, as I said, constipation can be part of this too. So decline in thyroid hormones from aging. Now, there's a whole bunch of other things, Stacey, that cause thyroid hormone to decline, but we're just talking about aging right now. As you age, that's just the normal progression, is those things happen. That doesn't always mean people have to be on thyroid medication out the gate. You can do other things to repair the thyroid function. But if one thing your audience has to understand is that the thyroid function influences ovarian function. Ovarian function influences thyroid function, and it all influences adrenals. It's all part of that trifecta, that triad. Mm-hmm.
You know, when it comes to autoimmune, like so many women are running on fumes, like high stress, poor sleep, you know, overcommitted, undereating, overtraining. What does that do to the adrenal system?
Yeah. Near and dear to my heart. So autoimmune disease is something that I treat day in and day out. There isn't a day that I go by that I am not treating, working up, or diagnosing an autoimmune condition. So just by definition, just so your audience understands, the autoimmunity is where your body's natural immune system has started to turn against your own body. So you start to fight things. You fight your joints and you get more joint pain. You fight your skin and you get more rashes. You fight your hair follicle and you get more hair loss. You fight your gut and you get things like, you know, irritable bowel syndrome, or even to the point, even further down the train of colitis, Crohn's, ulcerative colitis, things like this. Or it fights like your own kidneys or DNA in conditions like lupus, or your neurologic system in conditions like multiple sclerosis. So just so we know, in thyroid, a condition called Hashimoto's, which is highly, highly prevalent. Right. All of those things are considered autoimmune disease. So when you have an autoimmune condition, your body is fighting itself. When your body fights itself, it starts to suck all of that cortisol out of your adrenal glands to sort of live and survive. That's what's really important. If a body is chronically fatigued, if a body is chronically inflamed from whatever reason, the first hormone it goes after is not sex hormones or thyroid. It is cortisol. The body has to have cortisol to survive. So if you keep drawing from the cortisol bank, like I mentioned earlier, the bank is going to run out. So your cortisol curve, which should be like a banana curve. So when you get up in the morning, you have high cortisol to help you conquer and defeat the day. And then when you go to bed and you become dormant, your cortisol should be low. So it's like a banana. Well, a lot of people, they don't wake up ready to conquer the day. They wake up with low cortisol already because they've already withdrawn all the cortisol from the bank. So if you have a flat line, you're going to act flat. You don't get up, you don't get down, you have no energy, can't lose weight. You can't, I mean, it's terrible. And you get anxiety. So all of that autoimmunity and that stress and that burden on the system sucks all that cortisol away so that you end up getting eventually what's called adrenal fatigue. And that's a problem. And there's ways to diagnose that and treat that. But that's exactly what's happening when the immune system goes awry. It's sucking the cortisol for survival to help you with this inflammatory immune response you're dealing with.
Now, can chronic stress dysregulate the hormones?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So if you're somebody who is, you know, stressed from whatever, personal life, professional life, both, and both of those are amplifying each other, you're chronically going to have issues with your adrenal glands, which again, come back to, it's always the belly fat and it's always fatigue, belly fat, fatigue, belly fat, fatigue. That then dovetails into irritability because you're fatigued. So you get irritable and potentially get anxious and that runs into all that. So as that sort of happens, hormone levels decline. It eats up your gonadal response for you to produce testosterone, estrogen, and progesterone. So again, it's all sort of interplayed with each other.
Yeah. And how does this show up like years later?
Yeah. Well, it shows up clinically and it shows up physically. So because I'm a doc, I'll start with clinical. So this shows up clinically with your blood sugars going up. All right. Your blood pressure going up. Why does that happen? Well, with high cortisol, you get high insulin, you get high blood sugar. With high blood sugar, you get craving issues and you start to create this vicious cycle where you start to store calories. And ultimately, if you get wired and tired and you're not, and you're adrenally fatigued, most of these people are not wanting to exercise very much, right? They don't have the drive. They don't have the motivation to sort of do that. So it's this vicious cycle. If you don't exercise and you're not putting resistance training in, we haven't gotten to protein yet, but if assuming you're not eating much protein, if you're not getting into the resistance training you need, the whole anabolic side of building muscles and having a metabolism so that you can get rid of fat just can't happen because of that high cortisol state. So what I see in clinic is a waist circumference that's elevated, blood sugars that are elevated, blood pressure that's elevated, cholesterol goes up. All of this happens when someone like that is stressed. Physically, as I said, waistline. It's sort of like a puffier type face, edema. So just feeling like swollen for no reason, right? All of those sort of signs are someone who's adrenally challenged.
You know, when we were talking about autoimmune, the first thing that came to my head is that I know people that have autoimmune diseases, and one of the biggest thing is that they gave up because they thought, well, my body is against itself. There's no hope, you know, and they just, you know, they didn't, they tried to go for a little help, and then they just stopped because they thought there was no answer.
Heartbreaking, heartbreaking, because nothing could be further from the truth. So, I will tell you that every autoimmune patient, the number one risk factor of developing an autoimmune disease is having an autoimmune disease. So, if you have one, you're at risk for all 105 plus of them. And that is exactly what I see, people that come in with one or eight. And so, you know, this can get a little bit sophisticated on how we talk about it, but most people that have autoimmune disease, they're on a continuum of a decompensating timeline of their innate immune system. And just to keep it as simple as possible, inside of our immune system, we have things called T cells. T cells are supposed to scavenge the body for infections, viruses, yeast, fungus, all sorts of insults that are causing us to get sick and that are making our immune system not function. Unfortunately, our T cells, they start off very naive and very protective. They're called T regulatory cells, and they do really, really good at regulating us from not getting sick and getting autoimmune disease. But as we expose ourselves to the environment, to toxins, to, you know, how we eat, alcohol, whatever, when we start doing that, this regulatory side starts to move down the continuum into the dysfunctional side, where your T cells actually become inflammatory. Most T cells are anti-inflammatory. They're getting rid of inflammation, but they can flip into what's called pro-inflammatory T cells. And when you have T cells that are now attacking you, that's when you start saying, "Oh my God, I go by the frozen section, or I go by the freezer section, and my hands turn white. I can't even move my hands. They're like concrete." That right there is telling you that your T cells are dysregulating. That then goes into, I get these rashes on my face or in my scalp or in my ears, or I get these joint pains, or I have to drink water all the time because I have to clear my throat. I'm getting dry everywhere. That is a sign that you are going straight into autoimmunity. And there's ways to move the dial back to this spot where you were being regulated, and you have to do it with a comprehensive treatment platform of micronutrient repletion, gut health restoration, hormone replacement therapy appropriately, potentially thyroid and adrenal gland function. And then you get into the world also of possibly peptides, sort of immunomodulatory type therapies. But all of those things have to be done somewhat equally to restore people back to that innate state. So what I would tell you to those people that you just identified is that there is a place and a world for you to have a much better quality of life. And you can put that genie back in that bottle. You just have to find someone who's trained in how to do this kind of stuff, because sometimes access to the right people is actually the hardest thing for your people and consumers and patients, is actually finding someone who can do this. And I get that completely, and I empathize with it because I hear this every single day.
Now, if a woman is listening right now and she feels seen, where does she start?
If she feels what?
If she feels seen, so she could relate to everything that you just talked about, a lot of the things that we talked about today. If she says, "Wow, that's me," you know, where does she start?
Yeah, so that's tough, depending on where she actually is. I would say in general, you know, I have done a ton of training in the world of what's called functional medicine. And functional medicine is more of the root cause of disease and helping kind of unravel it and then put it back together. So it's giving people their why, essentially. Like, why do you have this problem? Why do you have these imbalances? And so there's ways of finding functional medicine providers. There's docs like me that do a decent amount of telemedicine, even though I'm concentrated in Texas. Health doesn't really know borders. So, I mean, there's all these things. Every state has all of this. And so I'm very fortunate to have a fairly large telemedicine business, just because, you know, people, if I had a dime for every time I'm asked, "Is there someone like you in wherever? Is there someone like you in?" And there's just not a great way of knowing that. So there's a decent way you can start with searching, you know, these certification bodies that some of us have gone through, that you can put provider information in there and your zip code. Those are okay. But even then, I'll tell you, it doesn't always come out to what you're looking for.
Right.
So I advise and train with a company that I feel like does really well on the hormone side, at least. We're kind of evolving our training into the autoimmune side too, but you know, so there's company. This is one of the biggest challenges, is finding the right people and the right person. This is not about me and having more patients or seeing more. I totally get that. That's the whole reason, Stacey, I love to train and teach doctors. 40% of my professional life is not seeing patients. It's actually teaching and training, because changing them is how you change the world. It's not just one doctor, one this, one that. So, I mean, if you want me to, you know, give you specifically where these websites are, or where these people, where they can go search this, I'd be happy to do that. You just tell me.
Oh, definitely, definitely. I
Okay.
think there's a lot of women out there that
Yeah.
need
So
help.
the two places that I feel know what they're doing when it comes to these things. One is the Institute for Functional Medicine. So ifm.org is a general, it's a place that takes doctors just like me and helps them understand things we were not taught. So ifm.org, I know, has a search engine on it, how you can find someone who's had any inkling of training through that organization in your zip code. The other company that I absolutely love is Biote, Biote. Biote has a pretty large following of providers, probably 9,000 strong now. I'm fortunate to help educate for this company, but as part of that, I help ideate on the principles of educating new doctors. And that's how I know a lot of this, is that I've just learned so much through them, but I've also been, you know, I have to teach this stuff to docs. So through them, we certify, you know, lots of docs around the country on these principles and these concepts. So that's a great place also to start, is just looking up through their find a provider kind of portal as well. Those are two good places to start. Just know that it is like a box of chocolates. When you open up a practice, you don't really know what it tastes like until you get in there. And so, as a consumer of this, I would say I would call. People do this to my practice all the time, and ask questions. Do you treat this? Are they good at this? Da 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 da. And if you feel like it's just the answers to your questions are not getting answered, it's probably not the right place. Because, listen, it's going to be an expensive endeavor in your time and your money to go down this path. And the last thing we want, because this is the who I see a lot of, is people that have gone seven different places, spent all kinds of money, and they really aren't any better for it. And those are heartbreaking, because they now have to put their faith blindly in me and my team to be able to do things. And we're good at it, and you just feel bad. Because, so I always tell anybody, just ask your questions, ask really good questions. Hopefully some of the information I give today just helps you know what questions to ask. And then if you just don't feel good about it, then just keep calling. But eventually you're going to be led in a direction. Well, you will find a physician health advocate. And that's what I tell my patients. I'm now your journey advocate. Like, I want you to be healthy. And if you don't stay healthy, then you hold me accountable, because I'll get you there. I mean, really, you need to have a doctor who's very competent and confident in what they do, not just dabbling, but actually doing it, you know? So hopefully that helps.
No, it helps a lot. It helps a lot. Now, explain to women why it's not just a 25 supplement protocol, because a lot of people just go right to the supplements and they don't, like we were talking right before the show, I mentioned quickly, like so many people, they go and they find something that's on the shelf, or one of the doctors might give them a supplement and say, hey, take this. This is going to help you.
So this is a subject near and dear to my heart. So supplements are truly that. They supplement something else. They're not replacing certain things, unless you're talking about actual nutrients that you've been shown to be suboptimal or deficient in, and then yes, you can replace them. But over supplementing your way to health is not a way to get healthy. And I'm talking about myself. I take a lot of supplements, but I'm telling you, I objectify things in my health to such a degree that I know that what I'm taking and what it's doing is absolutely producing the outcome I'm measuring in my own body. So nothing is ever taken willy-nilly. Now, this is a big, big pet peeve of mine. A lot of patients feel that they can optimize their hormones using supplements. Let's be very clear. A hormone is a hormone. You can use supplements to affect how you metabolize hormones or how
Yes.
you metabolize your hormones, but you can't use a supplement to replace hormones. Like, that is not even remotely possible. And I know this because I see these women and they take all the, they see these things and online or on this or that or some expert or some influencer or whatever. And they take these things thinking they're gonna, you know, fix their osteoporosis or their osteopenia, or they're gonna like avoid Alzheimer's. You know,
Yes.
some of these things are, first off, not objectifiable. You can't, you know, avoiding Alzheimer's, what is that? Like, how do you measure that? So you're essentially just committing to like lifelong, I guess, subscription payment for something that you don't know, which is a little scary to me. But let's talk about the osteoporotic side. You will still develop osteopenia and osteoporosis, even if you take supplements for hormones, right? Because the only thing to actually help with bone resorption and absorption and the rematrix and the feeding of the matrix is to be on estrogen, is to be on some testosterone, is to be on some progesterone. So I am not against supplements here and there to relieve a hot flash and things like this to control symptoms, but to actually change physiology, to lower heart disease risk and make claims like that, no possible way can you supplement your way there. And again, this is someone who uses supplements and also has them in his practice. I use them in their place. So that's exactly, you're exactly right. The supplement world, as most of your people understand, is not very regulated. And so who knows what is in whatever is said is to do this, this, or this. So since I do practice medicine, I have to live in a world where the nutrients that I take or the nutrients I recommend, there's at least some clinical human data behind it, not just sort of like claims or extrapolations from animal studies and things like that. So hopefully I didn't make anybody mad there, but it is really the truth. I mean, you have to be careful with those things.
I agree 100% with you. And I also wanted to ask you is that I've been to functional medicine doctors where they have been so thorough and they checked every nook and cranny. And then I've been to other functional medicine doctors where they just check for the basics. And what labs should a woman or a patient ask for, or what should they expect the doctor to write on that prescription when they go for their lab work?
Yeah, really good question. Here's why you've experienced this. The word functional medicine in 2026 is the wellness from 2010. So the word wellness, people just put it all over their practice, all over their website, all over their marketing slicks, and they're just like, I'm a wellness practice, right? And back then people were like, oh, that's like what? That's like Dr. Oz, and you know, that's, oh, I think I understand what that is, and you know, who really knew what that meant, right? Now
Exactly.
functional medicine is the new one. So functional medicine, people will say they are a functional medicine practice and they literally do aesthetics. That's it. They literally just do Botox and they do lasers and they're functional medicine. Then you'll have people that only do IVs and they'll say, I'm functional medicine. We're functional. And so that's really become a problem because as a consumer of the information, you're just trusting that you go somewhere that says they do functional medicine actually does functional medicine. So here's what I would say. If you want to try to find someone who actually does functional medicine, you need to call and say, what sort of testing do you do for virtually most of your clients? And if they say things like, oh, we do a microbiome analysis, we do, you know, we go into deep into your immune system and we see how you're absorbing things and we look for any insults, any parasites, any pathogens. We're looking for all sorts of like inflammatory markers within the gut so that we can fix your immune system so that you don't have immune problems. You're at a functional medicine. That's definitely functional medicine. We look at your adrenal glands. We look at your neurotransmitters. We do metabolite testing. You know, we're looking at particle size and particle testing and genetics, and we're seeing like how you detox. Do you not detox? Your hormones. We do a deep dive into your thyroid. We do a whole autoimmune screen. That took me like 17 seconds to tell you what test to look for. If they hear things like that, you know you're on the right path. But if all you hear is, oh, you know, we'll do some hormones and maybe we'll check a vitamin D level and then we'll probably try to maybe put you on some IVs and you know, you'll see our esthetician for kind of your outside appearance. At that point, you know that this is definitely not what I, and then now, you know, with the weight loss world we're in and this whole world of injectable, you know, GLP-1s, people are just putting medicine on stuff, and that's all it is. You just go there and behind the curtain and behind all the fun stuff and all the fancy stuff, it's just a weight loss shot. And it's like there's literally no one looking at my other things, you know? So I would say and I can only speak for myself, and I don't represent all of functional medicine, but I think we do a pretty good job. Is I think every human being, even the professional athletes I have that have no perceptible medical problems, I have to have them do a microbiome test. I like doing stool analysis. I like to do a 3-day stool analysis. Why? You can get so much information on, do you break down protein, carbs, and fats? How are you using your pancreatic enzymes? How are you know, what probiotics do you need? The one you take, is it the actual one you need? You know, if you bloat a lot, this is a big thing for women. I'm bloated no matter what. If I eat or if I don't, I'm always bloated. I'm uncomfortable. It sucks. I feel like I just ate. I don't want to eat because I get more bloated. You must look for small intestinal bowel overgrowth or SIFO, which is small intestinal fungal overgrowth. So simple to fix. So simple. So simple. Other thing is women that crave sugar a lot and have all these sort of like yeast UTI sort of situations and chemical and fragrance sensitivities. These women have to be checked for systemic candida, candidiasis. These things are so prevalent in healthy looking women, and it's so simple to fix. You just need to break the cycle of the yeast and what it's feeding off of. But these types of buzzwords, that is functional medicine. And if they're not getting those answers, they're not going to the right place. Does that help?
Oh, that helps tremendously because I see so many different types of doctors, doing functional medicine, and some are so thorough, and then some are just like very vague. And I believe when you go to a functional medicine doctor, you really need to get checked out for everything, and you want to, the whole objective is to prevent things from happening and to fix what is happening in the current, present tense, and to make sure that you have a healthy, long, outcome, in your future life, I think that's really important.
The other thing I'd say, Stacy, is if you find someone that you trust and you're committed to on this side of it, I would say don't just do that testing one time. I honestly feel if you want to stay healthy, if you want to stay cancer free, if you want to stay autoimmune disease free, if you want to stay dementia free, if you want to stay free of any of that cardiometabolic, heart disease, stroke stuff that everyone knows in their family, if you want to stay free of that, once a year, invest in objectifying your health at a level where it's almost impervious to you getting disease. And now in 2026, you, me, and anyone listening to this is so lucky that relatively inexpensively, that's a relative word, I understand that, you can get a whole body look at if you have, oh, I don't know, active cancer, any markers of dementia, any markers of autoimmunity. You can find out if your immune system is going down or going up or is exactly where it needs to be. And you have to just do 2 or 3 tests. If you do that every year, you're not going to be a statistic or another like case of like, you know, disability this or disease this, or end up on all these pharmacologic agents that really aren't actually helping anything other than just symptoms you're dealing with and just delaying the inevitable, which is the compensation of your system. Like, it's really what it is. It's just a continual commitment to that health advocate. And that's what I do is my patients once a year, I do these tests to make sure that the previous year did nothing to them. That's a problem. And I trust me when I tell you, when I do that, their health dollars that they would have spent somewhere else stay in their bank and they can put it into vacations with their family. They can do whatever. Because all we're doing is looking at some pretty incredible tests to make sure nothing has jumped up. And to me, that's real medicine. That's real insurance policy medicine. You know exactly what you have and you know what you don't. And that's what we try to do. So,
What lifestyle change matters the most?
yeah, so that's near and dear to me because this is where it all hits. Foundationally, if you don't get this right, even if you're on hormones right. So, I have a whole segment of patients I call non-responders, people that you put on hormone replacement. You give them thyroid, you know, adrenal support, and they don't feel anything. They still feel worse. And you realize this isn't just about that. I think lifestyle choices drive receptors in the body being more receptive. So, what I mean by that is hormone receptors, receptors that receive estrogen, progesterone, testosterone, thyroid, those receptors get dirty. They get covered up. They hide. They go away. You can't find them. So when you flood the body with hormones, thyroid, or whatever, and there's no response, that's because the receptor didn't receive the hormone.
Right.
The target is not, the package isn't being received at the site it needs to be received. So why do receptors get dirty? Why do they not work? It's how we eat. It's how we exercise. It's our inability to understand the power of hot therapy, cold therapy, resilient therapy, you know, red light therapy. I mean, there's so many things that go into creating resiliency so that your receptors are receptive. So that when you go to someone like me and I give you a hormone, you are that patient that says, oh my God, this was like a light going off. Like this was like, oh, this was amazing. Game changer. That's because you're someone who's healthy. You're someone who exercises and eats right and, you know, supplements correctly and all of those things. So the devil's in the details of each one of those categories. So as it relates to eating, here is my big thing about that. There is not a perfect diet for any one person. Everybody's different. And I do believe, just like muscle confusion, I believe in palate confusion as well. So if you get stuck on the same damn diet all the time and you're like, nope, carnivore saved my life. I'm going to do carnivore the rest of my life. You're going to miss out on, I just did one of these. A guy that like perceptibly, he thinks he's very healthy, eats carnivore, you know, feels good, da 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 da. But he had some serious medical challenges once we did the deep dive I just talked about and all of his diagnostics. And so we had to change some things up. And I was like, I know that like for you, literally carnivore is biblical. And I'm not saying you cannot, but we need to switch it up. And so I actually have health coaches, functional health coaches I employ that are just critical pieces to this puzzle that help people with their food relationships and how to sort of design their menus relative to their gut testing, but also kind of their goals and what's worked for them in the past. But eating nutrient dense food, right? So just limiting things that convert over into sugar and limiting things that are dirty and preservatives and process this and all of that. I mean, it really does matter to building up health equity that when you go on hormones or thyroid or peptides or blah, 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 that these things actually work for you. The other part to this is exercise. To me, muscle is the currency of life. If you don't have muscle, you don't live. It's that simple. You die quickly if you lose muscle. Well, as we age, we lose muscle. So how do we build muscle? Well, it goes back to the same thing. Hormones, 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 hormones. Then you have to actually exercise. You have to figure out what works for you. I'm all about efficiency, but whatever works for you. So resistance training to some degree with either interval training or at least doing like zone two training where you're losing fat and burning fat. And that's anybody can basically do zone two. Those are big ones for me. Adequate hydration, adequate protein. Both of those go hand in hand. You can't do enough protein if you're not doing enough water. So water is massively important for the protein side. Protein, a female that's 150 pounds minimum needs 100 grams a day. Minimum. It's going to be 80 to 120 if you look up the actual like metrics of that. But somewhere around 100 grams, if she wants to build muscle, if she wants to lean out and be firm, there's no woman ever that's come into my practice and says, I want to be fluffy. I want to stay fluffy. I always want to be fluffy. No one says that. They all want to be firm. Well, how do you be firm? You have to eat protein. And then after that, you have to eat protein. And then you have to eat protein again. And then you have to drink a lot of water, do resistance training, do your hormones, and you will not believe what happens to your waist. And here's what's going to happen. The scale may stay the same or may go up, but your inches are going to shrink and you're going to fit into clothes you haven't fit in a while. And you're going to feel so damn good because your body comp is shifting. Yeah. That is true lifestyle. Like exercise, finding what works for you on the food side. Maybe you do well with time restricted feeding. That's totally fine. There's a lot of good reasons to do that, but those types of things. And then you have to replete basic nutrients, right? A good multi, potentially a good probiotic, but that can be a little bit, depending on your gut, that can be a little bit of an issue. Vitamin D, and then EPA, DHA, right? So omegas, all those are just foundational, simple things. Those three things, if you do those things 80% correct, the next time you go to a hormone doctor and they put you on hormones, you're going to say, oh my God, I feel this. This feels great. You know, versus the woman who doesn't do any of those things. She's going to be like, girl, I tried that. That didn't do anything to me. I don't even know what you're talking about. Like, it didn't even touch me. That's because she's not receptive. Right. I mean, her hormones are not receptive. So
yeah.
I hope that helps.
No, it does. And what mistakes should one person stop making tomorrow? Like, say if you were speaking to the women out there, like, what's the mistake that they should stop making tomorrow?
The mistake they should stop making?
Yeah.
They need to stop. Here is what I would say. Women surround themselves with similar women and they think it's groupthink. They get into these groups and like, well, I guess that's how I feel too. That's what's happening to me. But everybody thinks that normal is normal. Wrong. Optimal is normal. You need to surround yourself with women who are optimal. And if you love your friends and they love you, you all become optimal together. And that is the number one thing. I get people that come in here and they're like, I mean, isn't this normal? Like everyone I'm with says this is normal for them. No, it's normal for us to get disease as we age. It's normal for us to get big as we age. It's normal for us not to sleep as we age. It's normal for us to be fluffy as we age. It's normal for us to be stressed and have that tire around our belly. It's normal for us to have like rashes and joint pains and can't get out of bed. Is that your normal? Like, that's normal. So I was like, no, that's not normal. So to me, it's redefining what normal is and shifting that to optimal. Optimal diet, optimal exercise. Not perfect. I didn't say perfect, just optimal. I strongly believe in the 80-20% life, right? 80% of the time, just do this, do this. Please try to do, like, I love sauna, right? So all these types of therapies to me, if 80% of my time I can hit my target on these things, and 20% of the time I let myself go and do whatever I want, I can live that life and I can survive that life because I don't have to be, you know, a perfect militant soldier. Any patient can do that. But our country's full of people doing 20-80. They celebrate the 20% of the time that they go to the gym or the 20% of the time they eat this. Or I'll remember my D3s 20% of the time. That is the upside down world that people find themselves living in. So that's what I would say.
Now, let's talk about weight for a moment. Like, because many women blame themselves, they eat less, exercise more, still gain weight. You know, we talked a little about this earlier. Like, can you go into the why? Is it the insulin? Is it the cortisol? Is it the thyroid conversation that we had?
Yep, good question. So it's all of it. So as your cortisol goes up and as your hormones goes down, your insulin goes up. How do you know what your insulin level is? You ask your doctor, please check my fasting insulin level. If they say no, or what is that, or I'm not sure what you're asking me, I think we need to find another doctor. And we talked about that earlier. Why? Because insulin, there's a war on insulin right now in this country, right? And I'm part of it, and I'm all about that. Because insulin's a big, big problem. Hormones declining, thyroid declining, and cortisol going up makes insulin go up. As insulin goes up, you eat more sugar. If you eat more sugar, you eat more carbs. You keep wanting to go back for that. You don't exercise as much. You get brain foggy. You have no motivation. And before you know it, your insulin goes up. As your insulin goes up, eventually your blood sugar goes up, and that whole thing starts to happen. So what's important to understand is insulin is a growth hormone. So if your insulin is elevated, my definition of insulin is greater than 8 fasting insulin. If it's greater than 8, you are insulin resistant. If you have a high insulin, everything is going to grow, which means your belly's going to grow, your body's going to grow. If you have any cysts, tumors, skin tags, polyps, anything in your body, it's going to grow when your insulin is up. That is number one. So we need to pulverize insulin. How do we do it? Hormones, thyroid, lowering cortisol, resistance training. Protein, 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 protein. When you eat protein, protein is naturally filling. So when you eat protein, a lot of times you don't want to eat anymore because you got enough. Like, that's awesome. Because if you don't want to eat anymore, you're not going to grab those refined carbohydrates that feed that whole insulin cycle. So to answer your question, it's all of it. But insulin is a massive, that's why these shots are doing so well. I mean, my God, these are billion, trillion-dollar drugs. Because they're kind of like that easy way out without doing any of the things you and I discussed. Just do the shot and it lowers the insulin and you lose weight, right? So, but that's really, really important.
I think most of those people, once they stop the shots, they go back to their old eating habits and lifestyle, then they gain all the weight back and more.
A lot of times they do. And I would tell you, you're going to probably laugh at this, but if someone comes to me and asks for that shot, I actually believe that shot's a miracle in some patients. What I would tell you is, I tell everybody, you haven't earned the right to be on that shot yet. So we need to earn that right. And how do we earn that right? I got to look at your gut. I got to look at your body. I got to look at your inflammation. I got to blah, 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 blah. I got to look at your immune system. I got to fix all that, get your hormones right. And then if your body comp isn't right or your insulin's not responding, you might have earned the right to be on it. And most people look at me like, dude, I just came here to get a shot. Why are you being so complicated? But that's the right way. That's really, in my opinion, that's the right way to do it.
Yeah,
So,
no, I agree 100%. Now, why is eating less move the eating less move more failing for so many women?
Yeah, you know, eat less, move more is that's kind of lazy in my opinion. It doesn't eating less, you actually can eat more to lose weight. Like you don't
Right.
have to. Okay, this is also very important because this happens on those shots I just talked about. It's the same thing. If you're
Okay.
eating less, if you put your body into starvation, you
Yeah.
split your metabolism. So your ability to metabolize your calories out of your body goes way down because your
Yeah.
body is like, I'm starving. I need to hold on to everything. It's the
Yeah.
same thing that happens on those shots. When you're starving, you become malnourished. When you become malnourished, you get a little belly and you may thin out in the arms and the legs and things, but you get a little belly. And that's part of the response of starvation. And
Right.
when you starve yourself, your cells literally start to die. And when your cells die, here's what happens. This is what every person that says eat less, move more, or do those particular shots says. I'm tired. My hair's falling out. I can't. I'm anxious. I used to never have anxiety. Now I can't remember anything. I never
Right.
remember where my keys are. I never remember what I'm doing. I don't sleep well. You know, that those are literally the signs of starvation. And I'm just so mind-boggling that when you sit down in front of someone and they have all the symptoms of starvation,
Right.
I'm like, you do realize the problem here. It's not that you need more pharmacologic agents. It's that you literally aren't feeding yourself. And they all say
Yeah.
the same thing. Well, if I do that, I'm going to gain weight. And I'm like, hopefully, like we want to gain muscle. Like we want to gain the right weight. Like we need you to gain weight so that we can figure out if you actually need to lose it. But we're not there yet. Like it's so metabolically deranged right now. So
Yeah.
the eat less, move more idea, calories in, calories out. I mean, that's pretty old school and rudimentary. I would say you can still do that with adequate protein intake and nutrient repletion, period. Your cells need basic raw material for the machinery to run, and
Yeah.
starving the body is never going to work, ever. It just doesn't. It ends up with you on antidepressants and mood stabilizer pills and things that you know, and then they get on phenamine. This whole thing, it's just bad, 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 bad. So you opened up one there with me. So
What does proactive hormone care can actually look like to somebody?
proactive hormone care is partnering with that health advocate who can start assessing your laboratory data early and start looking at things, right? Always asking you questions about how your cycles are. How is your PMS? This is a big one too. So if women are like, you know, I'm moody, I'm bloaty, I gain fluid, my PMS is terrible, I want to kill everyone, like all of that sort of stuff. There's ways of fixing this. This is back to that discussion. There's certain nutrients you can take on the supplement side that help metabolize out some of those hormones before menstruation kicks in and they feel so much better. Or they have a regular cycle. So to me, it's finding someone early that can talk to you about your hormones. It may be your gynecologist, or maybe, like I said, like a functional, like someone who has a good background on this that can talk about these things. So to me, you know, proactive hormone care isn't about being on hormones. It's about like testing these things and waiting and talking about them at least annually on how you're feeling, so that when the transition starts to happen, because again, it's a certainty it will. It's not gonna happen. It will happen. Then you can start talking about it. As women get into those late 30s and early 40s, they do. They're just less firm. I mean, that's just what happens physiologically. The testosterone that she's making is anabolic to muscle, right? It makes muscle grow and it's catabolic, eats fat. So it eats fat away. Well, when she loses that hormone, guess what? It flip-flops. She gains more fat, she loses more muscle. So, I mean, all of that stuff really, really matters. And so you just have to find someone who's willing to talk about it, test it, and prepare you for it so that she's ready, you know, and doesn't have to wait years and months and months and months to find someone that can do it when she's already in that phase of life.
Right. Now, what does proactive, being like breaking down, how can we prevent breakdown instead of reacting to disease?
Yeah, so near and dear to me. I understand very much that prevention isn't the sexiest thing in healthcare, right? Meaning, prevention is very difficult to objectify. And this is, I'm just telling you what I tell my patients. we don't have the luxury of having an angel on our shoulder like the gentleman in the Christmas movie It's a Wonderful Life does, who essentially is taken through his life if he had never existed and what would have happened and blah, 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 blah. In healthcare, I wish we could come up with an AI bot that basically would say, if you don't take this or do this or go on these hormones or take this compound or eat this way or exercise or hit those 100 grams of protein or whatever, if you don't do that, in 7 years, you're going to have a fracture. In 7 years, you're going to get a breast cancer lump. In 7 years, you're going to have an autoimmune diagnosis. In 7 years, you're going to start to lose your memory. We don't have that luxury. So prevention, though, I strongly feel is finding, I keep coming back to this, but finding that partner who you feel you can trust, who knows what they're doing, who honestly looks and walks the talk that they talk and not just like, you know what I mean? Then we're going to leave it at that. But there's a lot of those out there too. They know their stuff, but they don't do their stuff. And that's a problem. And so I think it's finding that advocate, you telling them, because what's really important is what your goals are. It's not what their agenda is or their, it's what you want. And if what you want is to not deal with what your grandmother did or your aunt that you love dearly, you don't want to be diagnosed with cancer at the age of whatever.
Right.
Then it all depends on what that answer is. But I would say if that was the answer, my sister got cancer at 38. My mother got cancer at 51. I don't want that. Good.
Right.
So I'm going to go through an entire talk about what's called liquid biopsies, because I'm going to make sure this patient understands every single year you're going to come to me. I'm going to draw a single tube of blood and I'm going to tell you with about as good a certainty as we can in healthcare that you don't have stage one or stage two cancer of the blood, solid organ, pancreas, brain, breast, anywhere. Those tests exist today. And those are tests that I love to do on patients if they're willing to do it, because it's a screen without doing a $3,000 MRI to look for whole body cancer. This one's looking for like melanoma, like literally a blood test. Like these are really, really cool tests. So it really depends on what they're asking me they want. But that's one example that if she said, I don't want to get that, or I don't, then good. Every year commit to this test and we'll know that we're going to, you know, we'll prevent it.
Right.
Same thing, heart disease. Like if my brother had heart disease, okay, great. We're going to go do an AI generated input of your heart. And we're going to look and see at the smallest of the vessel and the biggest of the vessel at the age of 30. I'm going to start looking and seeing if you have any plaque deposition. If you don't, awesome. Keep doing what you're doing. If I start seeing microscopic plaque deposition, I'm not putting you on medication. I'm going to put you on a couple things I know that can help remove some of that plaque or seal the lining of the artery. All of those things, right, are available. It's just a matter of what is the scenario the patient presents to me.
Right. Now, what does longevity medicine really mean?
Yeah. So that is becoming, okay. So I told you wellness 2010, functional medicine 2020, 2030, longevity. The longevity is going to be like that. So you're going to see practices that say longevity practice. They're going to just mark out functional medicine and it's going to say longevity. And so listen, I don't know how to define that for you, but I'm going to tell you what I think it is. Longevity medicine is the world of helping someone fix and maintain a healthy health span so that their lifespan is positively impacted, which means they stay healthy for as long as possible in their life until their life is over. And longevity is meant to do that. So longevity can be anything from, well, hormones, immune system restoration, peptide therapy, nutrient repletion, IV therapy. You know, there's so many different aspects of this. As I keep saying, sauna and cold plunging and, you know, all of this stuff goes into this world of longevity. So I think there will be a space where longevity is the new buzzword of the year. And we're not there yet, but it's coming. And I'm not against it. I'm not trying to be cynical. I'm just saying that's just what I see. It's like wellness and functional and longevity. And so if we're doing things right, though, Stacey, like if we're truly functionally looking at someone from the inside out, like as a unique human being, what better longevity than, I mean, what's better to replace a health span or repair a health span to me than that? So really, to me, it's already longevity. It's just a new word that is now being put on marketing ads. So.
And how early should women start paying attention?
Oh my God. as early as they can. I mean, you know, you may not know this, but there's women, and maybe you do know this, there's women out there that have very unfortunate circumstances where they've gone through surgical menopause, right? So some emergency or catastrophic outcome or something, they had to have their uterus removed early, like 20s, right? Which is crazy. But when that happens, oh boy, like those are rare, but when they do, you got to jump on those women quickly, and you've got to get them. They're going to age very, very fast, and both how they look, but also how their body ages and just the disease progression. So you have to hit them very hard. But assuming it's not that age, you're still che I'm still checking the same on my 19-year-old girls, my 18-year-old, I'm still checking the same things that I do on my 100-year-old, because it's just that important. Early detection is the name of the game. The sooner you early detect disease in this particular country, the sooner you detect disease, the better your chances of beating it and never dealing with it. But if you let things get all the way down to where they're so bad, sometimes it is very hard to turn the clock back. So early detection is, well, how do you early detect? You find a doctor that is focused on prevention so they can actually know what to detect to know what to prevent. I mean, that's really how it all works.
For sure. Now, what's the mindset shift from reactive care to preventive care?
That's a difficult one, because most consumers are robotically programmed to just react. Doctors are robotically programmed to react. So in some ways, we're in this together. We really are. Patients and doctors kind of think the same. We just wait for you to break down, and then we'll jump in and save you when we can with medications. And patients are like, well, I guess I'll just wait to break down, and hopefully that won't happen for a very long time so I can enjoy life. And that's really the outcome everybody thinks is going to happen. So if you don't have a doctor who shifts their thought from what I just said, then you're going to be committing yourself to that path. You have to take control of it and find someone who isn't just committed to, let's just watch and wait. Let's just monitor you. Let's just put you in surveillance. These terms we use all the time in healthcare. We're going to just watch it. We're going to just watch it. That's it. Watch it. We're just going to watch it. I hear this all the time. We're going to watch what? The antibodies attack your joints, and just wait. We're just going to wait until the joints just can't be attacked anymore because they're so degraded. Yeah, that's not, to me, that's like, what? Like, it just makes no sense. So you just have to find someone. I mean, and to me, now that the type of medicine I practice, it's so clear. I just wish this clarity hit most of my colleagues, because they would understand, like, look, this is essential medicine here. This isn't alternative by any means. Like, this is what people need. So to me, the mind shift, you have to find the person or the clinic or the team that is, 100% focused on testing early and not worrying about what others think, not worrying about, oh, that's not the standard of, care, or that's not the standard. Who cares? It's the standard of their care. It's the standard of my care. So, like, why does that matter? Like, there's no harm, right? That's it. First, do no harm. There's no harm. Yeah, you may have to pay for it, but at the end of the day, why wouldn't you invest in that to not get a problem that's going to drain you financially and emotionally later? Let's just prevent it now. And also objectify it every year. Not just say we're preventing it, but actually prove it every year. Show you that you're not developing this, and this, and this. That's really the key.
Oh, that's so true. Can you tell us a little about the services that you provide?
Yeah, sure. So, well, we do functional medicine, and I mean it. So, so we do pretty high-end testing on that side. So again, it doesn't matter how healthy or unhealthy someone is. We really like every patient. I love my complicated people that have lots and lots of health issues, because they've been everywhere and they're not getting answers, and they feel like they're at their wits' end, and those people are really rewarding when you can turn things around for them. So for us, we do, so we don't do insurance medicine. I don't know, your audience probably understands this, but the type of medicine I just described to you, the insurance companies look at you like you're speaking six different foreign languages. They have absolutely no idea what you're talking about. So if I was to tell them early detection is the name of the game and prevention, blah, 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 they would be like, what? Like, they would have no idea. So we only deal in sort of direct cash services, because that's just the way healthcare is designed for us. So for us, it really does start with the intake and doing a pretty deep dive. My background actually before healthcare was in forensic science. So I worked in law enforcement for like 3 years and did a lot of forensic science stuff, like with just unsolved cases and deaths and things. And so I'm only telling you that because that brain that I use to put pieces together to sort of solve, what happened to this person that had been found. I do that exact same thing now, exact same thing now. but I'm working on someone who can laugh and cry and smile. And, you know, and so I just do a forensic dive, and that's what we do. My team does. We do a forensic dive into someone, doing all the testing I described earlier, from gut to, you know, genetics and hormones and all that. Then once we find out what your goals are and what your diagnostics show, we marry those with what we do. And what we do is lots of fixing of the gut, of the menu, how you exercise, nutrients, hormones, thyroid, adrenals. We dabble in the peptide world. Micronutrients are very, very important to us. I do a lot with the immune system to help repair it. That whole thing I said earlier, where you move the dial back to where your innate system used to be when you were fighting everything off. So that's us. It all starts with the deep dive in the immune system, and then taking everyone as an individual, and then putting the pieces together and adding the therapeutics in the way we know how. So that's really how we do it.
I love it. I love it. You know, I want people to realize that exhaustion is not a personality flaw. Weight gain is not a lack of willpower. You know, the autoimmune issues are not random. You know, sometimes the body isn't broken. You know, it's a signal of imbalance. And I just want people to know, if today's conversation resonated, follow the podcast, because we don't normalize suffering here, and we solve it, you know. And we'll include Dr. Rice's information in the show notes if you want to explore his work further. And can you tell everybody where they can find you?
Yeah, sure. So I'm in the Dallas area. You know, the easiest thing is just to find me online. It seems kind of cliche to do this, but if you Googled me, there's a lot out there. But on the, just my actual, you know, where I practice, it's mymodernmedicine.com is where you can go and just sort of look at some of the services, read my background and some of the providers I have here. I think we did a pretty good job of putting that together so people feel comfortable with who they're joining. I've literally, Stacey, I know you're going to think this is crazy in today's time. I personally do not have any Facebook. I don't do Facebook. My business does. I've never touched it. I don't go to it. I've never even read one review online. But I literally haven't. Patients come to me all the time and they're like, have you ever seen your reviews online? I mean, they're incredible. And I was like, you know what? I don't really, you know, you telling me that is fine, but that does mean the world to me, that, but my, you know, patients are like my life, man. So I'm not surprised they say that, because we do pour ourselves into these people. So, but I've been told, you know, if people are trying to come to you, you should tell them to read your reviews. Okay, fine. Then do that. I actually have not. So, but that could be something if they wanted to, but that's where they would find me.
Now, if for the telemedicine, if people are outside the Dallas, Texas area, can they still get telemedicine for, you know, converse and get your help?
Yeah, 100%. So Texas law right now is, in the first, one of the first two visits that they would do with me needs to be within the state lines of Texas. So it doesn't necessarily mean in my office, even though that is that's preferred. We have to make sure that one of those first two visits is in person-ish in the state in which I practice medicine or have a license to practice medicine. Yeah. I've thought about getting licenses all over the place. I just haven't gone through with that yet. But Texas is a big state. So I've actually had, ironically, I've had a neurosurgeon from California. He like drove or flew to, I think it was El Paso or Lubbock, one of the two. And he just sat and we just telemed. That's it. And it was legal. So I just learned him, and I put down all the information he gave me. And the way the law is written is like, as long as you have a pretty comprehensive visit, I can own whatever the diagnoses are like for the rest of their life. So where technically the law gets weird is if you and I, or you, a patient and I, are somewhere in Texas, talk, is if you give me all these things, but you never actually mentioned you have any headache problems, and then a year or two or three later, you call and say, hey, I have a headache, can you help me with that? Technically, if you didn't talk to me about that when I first had that encounter, when you were in the state I was practicing, they don't let me do that. It's kind of wishy-washy and kind of funny. So we try to go through a pretty comprehensive thing. So to answer your question, one of those first two visits has to be somewhere within Texas to do a Zoom with me, or at least come see me in person. One of my offices is 10 minutes from DFW. So that's, you know, a lot of people fly in and they'll come see me there. But after that, we never see each other again in person. It's all like this on Zoom. But that one visit somewhere in Texas, if not at my airport location, just has to happen.
All right, that's great to know. I want to thank you so much, Dr. Corey, for coming on the show today and sharing all this information. You really covered a lot of different angles today and went over a lot of important, information that a lot of women are yearning to find the answers for. And I just want to say thank you so much for what you're doing and for helping so many people out there, because it's going through perimenopause, menopause, postmenopause, and going through different illnesses and like autoimmune is something that's very stressful on people and very hard to live a healthy, happy, and productive life when you're dealing with illness. So I just want to thank you so much for, being there for everybody, coming on the show, sharing your knowledge. And I just kudos to you for everything you're doing. And I want to just thank you once again for being here. And I hope you'll come back another time.
Thank you. I'd love to come back. And trust me when I say this, resources like you matter. Resources like you change where people go. This is not about me. This is not about my practice. This is about me being a conduit to spread information, not misinformation, information, so that people like you can get this message out there, so that people like your listeners can finally get the help they've been dying for. So I chomp at the bit to do these types of things. And I'm very fortunate to be asked to do these types of things. And so I'm putting it back on you. I really appreciate you for having a forum and a conduit to get this out there, because patient care is my life, and these people need they need to find that health advocate.
Oh yeah, for sure, for sure. So thank you so much once again. I appreciate you and thank you for being here today.
Thanks, Stacey.